drones, floodplains, and automobiles. It's the Snetterton Review. You look like Jürgen Klopp. You look like you're running out of energy on this podcast.
Oh, I am. If you keep coming up with starts like that.
Yeah, there is a solution.
Yes?
You come up with the intro.
I come up with a few of them.
Anyway, it's going to be a long pod as it is without a speaker at the start.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. Of course, we are going to take you through the review for the Snetterton weekend. And what a changeable, different climatic weekend it was.
Yep, very much so. It was a weekend full of strategy, full of tyre calls, full of, you know, circuits not being able to hold water again. It's, the British Touring Car's greatest hits this weekend, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think all we were missing was a little bit of snow and, that was probably about it.
Absolutely. If there's any huffing or panting in the background, the dog is in the room just to... It's not Sam sighing at me every 5 minutes. obviously, the first place to start is qualifying on the Saturday, which was not true to the weather forecasts we were looking at and was a little bit damp.
Yes, obviously still with the Super 6 format, and it keeps throwing up some nice interesting results, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was spot on again saying that two drivers would miss out on getting into the top six, and I think we're going to see that throughout the season, particularly as the hybrid allocations take their toll on the cars, etc. But yeah, it's certainly shaking up the grid for race one, which is what you want.
And yes,
we're seeing, you know, some interesting results, as you say. For me, so the star of qualifying is, well, obviously Jake Hill was quick all weekend, but Bobby Thompson, first time in the car, first time in this format anyway, in that car, first time he's ever been able to use hybrid, first time driving it on these kind of conditions.
Yeah.
And he got comfortably into the top six and was challenging for the front row at times.
Yeah, the major casualty of the first two sessions, obviously those first knockout sessions, was Tom Ingram missing out, only just, but still missing out, which would see him start 13th on the grid for race one on Sunday. A couple of other names that did miss out was also Taylor Smith and Moffitt. Going into session two, at this point, Hill was still setting fastest times in each session as well. You could see he'd really hooked the car up. And I think you said on race day on Sunday that he didn't make any changes to the car from FP1 onwards.
No, his car's in a sweet spot this weekend. He was absolutely sublime.
So, yeah, it certainly was. And then in the second session, Turkington was the main casualty to miss out, obviously giving you points, which we'll get to later in the show. And then just missing out, pit at the post was Watson, who fell down into seventh when I think it was Cook that improved to go through. So the final session meant that Hill will be starting on pole from Sutton, from Morgan, from Camish, from Thompson, from Cook. Three BMWs in the top six was fairly ominous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a BMW circuit, and obviously Hill and Morgan and Thompson had bigger hybrid than Colin did. Morgan actually produced quite a good qualifying session, and I think that said that's the first time he's qualified in the top three back to back.
Yeah, two weeks in a row that he's managed to pull something pretty good out of the bag.
Shame he's not converted it on the race day, but we'll get to that. I think that you also got to give immense credit to Ash Sutton, who is there with 1 second of hybrid, which is basically you blink and you miss it. It's so marginal to make any difference on his car, and yet he still performs. He's still got into all three of the top sixes this season, and he's put himself on the front row of the grid going into Sunday.
I still find it amazing that he's able to do that, and he still hasn't taken a win, and he's just got that nice consistency about him so far this season.
He's doing a Colin Turkington from 2019?
Yeah, he's well on top of the car most of the weekend. But yeah, shall we move into race one then?
Yeah, there's a lot to get through, so we'll start with race one. Obviously, as you say, it wasn't a great deal of strategy to really call here. Obviously, there were the three tyres this weekend, so you had to use soft, medium and hard throughout the weekend. If you finish in the top 10 in race one, you had to use the hard in race two.
Yep.
And this presumably you'd already run the hard in race one, I assume. You then do the medium. We'll get on to the tyre discussion, particularly in race two, because I've got, as you'd expect, a lot to say on the subject. But race one was sort of the appetizer of the weekend. Not a great deal happened.
No, I think that a couple of the guys commented that the track was very similar to how the end of qualifying finished. So it was still damp, a little bit greasy, but definitely a slick track.
Oh, yeah.
And consequently, there were two drivers that went for the hard to try and get that done out the way, which were both the LKQ Euro car parts with Synetic and Starline and all those other sponsors, in Josh Cook and Aidan Moffitt. And it was noticeable how poor that hard tyre is in a race format.
Well, yeah, particularly when you got to later in the day and people actually want to use wets rather than the hards.
Yeah.
It was an odd one by Cook. Moffitt, I can stand near the back of the grid, get out of the way. But obviously, rain was forecast for the day, and for Cook to be at the front, took the gamble. But I suppose, to be fair, he comes away with two podiums at the end of the weekend, so yes, his gamble did work.
Yeah, so the rest of the top seven, obviously apart from Cook, were on the soft tyre and they were looking to make the absolute most of it. And Bobby Thompson certainly did that off the start line, didn't he? He made an electric start.
Yeah, hooked up brilliantly. I was into third by sort of the second corner.
Yeah, Morgan, surprisingly, even though in the rear-wheel drive, struggled to get it hooked up, and Sutton was able to still get the car off the line really quite well. Cook was the first real casualty. He started sliding back through the grid, not helped by a slide wide down at the S's, which there were some damp parts to.
Yep.
But he was passed by three drivers, and he was really struggling to get any sort of heat into that tyre at all, which we saw him struggle throughout the rest of the race for that. Chilton and Moffitt had significant contact going into the hairpin.
Yeah, I mean, great work for the cameras again. We only got the onboard of Chilton, yeah, so it's hard to see what really happened. I will say, and it's with a caveat that we've not seen the full footage, it seems clumsy by Chilton from the onboard, but it was there squeezing? I don't know. It's so hard to tell unless you get the camera angles. What I will say is that Chilton didn't get a penalty for this incident, so yeah, racing incident probably, but he was forced up over the sausage curb because of the contact. So, yeah, it's one of those where I'm unsure.
Yeah, I don't know whether Moffitt had made a late lunge into the hairpin and caught the inside and ramped up over one of the wheels or yeah, it was really difficult to tell from what the cameras were showing us.
Yeah, I think basically my interpretation is Chilton tried to go around the outside, wasn't enough room, and they just squeezed, possibly Moffitt had a car on his inside as well. I don't know, it's so hard to tell without footage.
But consequently, Moffitt got a puncture from that, dropped down to the back of the field, had to come in the pits to get that changed, and his race didn't really improve much from there because he was so far behind.
Never going to in those conditions.
No, it certainly wasn't. Next incident was Sumpton and Osborne coming together down at the S's. Sumpton spinning again. Not many replays of this. Sumpton spinning, Osborne carrying straight on across the S's, across the grass. I don't know whether one of them came in a little bit too hot, whether Osborne was taking avoiding action and Sumpton was spinning on his own, or whether there was contact.
That was the wettest part of the circuit throughout the weekend. It just didn't dry out that part at all, to be fair. And he wasn't the only driver to lose a few S's over the weekend.
No, certainly wasn't. As I said, Cook was falling through the field. But in retrospect to that, Ingram was making very good progress through the field as well, going from 13th to 6th overall. And then Smiley was getting a bit warm in the car, possibly.
He was so unlucky. But Smiley qualified well, and he was running well in race one. And, yeah, the door came open, basically.
I don't know whether he had contact or whether it was just a latch failure or what, but you could see him going down the straight, sort of like snapping the car to one side to try and close the door. Unfortunately, it was on the other side to where he was sitting in the car, so he couldn't just reach across and either hold it closed or close it himself. And unfortunately, he got a black and orange flag for it, which is understandable.
That black and orange flag is completely fair enough. It sucks for him because he was doing really well. But yeah, that is where a black and orange flag has to happen. I completely agree. The only thing of any note in race one, in my view, is that DeLion dropped it on his own, and Osborne nearly managed to take himself out because he had also ran wide at the same corner and then had to take avoiding action while sliding about. So yeah, a bit of an experience from DeLion, but not necessarily unexpected. And really, that was race one, really.
Yeah, so the top 15 then, all the point scorers were Jake Hill from Bobby Thompson, who managed to get past Sutton with a fairly easy move. Sutton explained afterwards that he didn't really fight it. He had far less hybrid and such and so forth. Camish finished fourth, just behind Sutton. Watson in fifth. Ingram sixth. Morgan seventh. Turkington eighth. Rob Huff in ninth. Dan Rowbottom in 10th. Pearson in 11th. Taylor Smith, 12th. 13th was Dobble. 14th eventually was Josh Cook, having fallen through the field. And then in the final points playing position was Tom Chilton.
Also, not shown on the television, but we can mention it because we happened in front of us. Nick Halstead went off on his own. I was just about to skip out of the barrier.
It went wide at Palmer. Yeah. And I was just like, I was taking pictures at the time. And you were like, Halstead's off.
Yeah.
But yeah, joined without any issue, although that was the only race that he would complete this weekend, or even start.
Yes, as moving into race two now, you're right, Halstead did withdraw through illness, so obviously we wish him a speedy recovery. Yep. And hope he's nothing too serious. Right, the soapbox is coming out, Sam. Race two was delayed due to a very, very, very heavy deluge of rain, and I accept that when they stopped the F4s, it was far too dangerous to race. I accept that. Yes. That was far too heavy rain to be racing in.
We went and cowered in the car, didn't we?
Yeah. It was a thunderstorm. It was too wet to race in. However, how have we got circuits in this country that want to be Grade 1 listed, and in some cases are Grade 1 listed certified, we're going to call it,
yep,
that don't drain? In England.
My caveat to the amount of rain that we had this weekend is the rain that came over at that time, just before the start of the, or during the F4 race, was extremely heavy. It came over extremely quickly.
Yes.
And a lot of drainage systems would struggle to deal with that amount of water. And it seems as if, from reports that I've heard, that drains were blocked, which is why a lot of stuff wasn't escaping, okay, especially down at the S's and down at the bomb
hole. Can I ask a question as to why drains are blocked? Why they're not cleaned out ahead of a weekend like this? It's the thing that gets me, right, is that this is the top echelon of, well, allegedly the top echelon of tin top motorsport. It's the pinnacle of this particular category of racing in the UK.
Yes.
And every single week, there seems to be something that lets it down, whether that be poor camera work, poor planning, circuits not being up to spec. You know, there's lots of worry about the long-term future of the touring cars, smaller grids, rising costs, etc. We can't get the basics right. And I accept what you're saying, that the rain was very sudden, very heavy. But we lost a whole hour. We're trying to suck. There's got to be a better way than taking a suction machine out and a tractor to try and pump water to the circuit. There's got to be a better way. And it can't have come as a surprise that where bomb hole is, due to the big dip, water collects there. Obviously, it's going to. And it was clear from other races or other weather during on Saturday and Friday that water was not draining properly from the S's.
Mm-hmm.
If drains are blocked, and I appreciate that's not been officially communicated, but yeah, drains cannot be being blocked going into a touring car weekend. That's not good enough.
They don't necessarily have to be blocked going into the weekend. The amount of rain and runoff that we've had over this weekend is probably enough to block up some drains.
Possibly.
And therefore, another heavy rainfall on top of that during the weekend is not going to help. We felt underfoot how wet some of the ground was.
Yeah, no, I accept it was freakish in the amount that came down, but this is England. You've got to expect there's going to be rain.
Mm.
And we lost a whole half a day of racing at Donington.
Yes.
We lost an hour here.
Yes.
And in the day, from the fans' point of view, it's expensive to go to touring cars now.
Yes.
It's nowhere near as cheap as it used to be. And to lose racing due to weather where you don't get this problem in, well, I don't see this problem in F1, for example. Circuits drain a lot quicker. The problem in F1 where they don't race is the spray. It's not to do with the circuit, it's the spray that comes off the cars.
And sometimes it is drainage of circuits as well.
Not as often.
Spa being one.
Spa
that
being
I remember.
One. Yeah, I accept Spa. And I accept the farce that was Spa a couple of years ago. But generally speaking.
And I think if we had the similar sort of rainfall at Silverstone for an F1 event, I still think somewhere like that may struggle.
I don't think it would. We've had really heavy rain in the touring cars there, and it's been fine. I think back to the Jack Goff win, which was heavy, quick, lots of it, and they still
It was more consistent.
Yeah, I get that.
I think it is the flash flood aspect of this.
I get that. But what I'd also argue is that it takes so long to get it cleared, and I appreciate that everybody who was clearing it was doing the best they could and was doing their job, and I'm not blaming them in any way, shape or form. They can only work with the equipment they've got.
Yes.
That's not their fault. But actually, I think that the race we then got was more dangerous than if we'd raced with it being wetter, because you had a track that was completely unpredictable, people going out on the wrong tyre or going out on tyres that then weren't suiting the conditions. You know, you get a grid of fast drivers, slow drivers because of the different tyre combinations. And actually, to me, that's more dangerous than racing in the wet. where everyone's on wet tyres and expecting the same thing. And I'm not saying race in the deluge we got for F4, because that was silly. Yeah. I accept that. That's not safe to go racing. I accept that. I'm not a complete monster. I accept that.
What about the races that we get, like that final race where, as we'll get on to, a couple of the drivers started on the wet tyre and it went to dry? If you're saying that it's going to be too dangerous to run on a track where you've got two different compounds and drivers at different speeds, then you're not going to get entertaining races like that.
My point, race three is slightly different insofar as the track wasn't so wet and unpredictable. Race two, half the track was wet, half the track was dry. And you end up in a situation where neither was the best option.
Do you make it a mandatory wet race then? And that all the drivers have to start on a wet tyre?
I think you do, because then it brings up my second point, is that if it's a race like that, then the hard tyre should not be an obligatory one for those who finish in the top 10. It seems nonsense to me that your choice is wet or the hard tyre if you're in the top 10. I don't like this new rule at all. And I don't think it's necessary with the way the hybrid works.
There was confusion over that rule as well, going up and down the grid, and I've got a couple of different aspects of how people have interpreted it and then how it was clarified.
Well, Tim Harvey explained it that the tyre you nominated for race two ahead of race two was the tyre you then had to use if you didn't use the wet tyre.
Yes. So there were a couple of teams or drivers that were under different impressions of how it then worked. Ingram made the point that if the hard tyre isn't used because of the rain in race two, the tyre then moves to race three.
Which is nonsense.
Which I agree is a strange rule and definitely needs clearing up.
We need eradicating if that is the rule, because that's nonsense.
And then Ash believes that if the rain is present and you've nominated the hard tyre as your soft tyre for race two, then that is your nomination for that race, and then you don't have to use it in race three.
That's sensible. I agree with that.
And then Alan Gow cleared it up. A statement went out to all team managers saying the option tyre will be used at the next available race at that meeting if race two is a wet or needing a wet tyre.
So you'd have to run the hard, which is
exactly why Hill would have had to run a hard tyre in race three, and why he then chose a wet.
See, that's a nonsense rule. That's nonsense. That's nonsense.
Yes. But there was a lot of confusion as to what should have been run, or what you could run, or what the choices were, which is why we saw a lot of the drivers, if they were starting on the slick or wanted to then go on to the slick, which a couple of the drivers did after the formation lap, which is why they went on to the certain tyres they went on, because those are the tyres that they had been nominated or obliged to start on for that race.
Which to me is bonkers, and it was also quite dangerous in the fact that you might decide to chuck a race or to get those tyres out of the way. That seems completely wrong. I don't like this new rule anyway. I don't think it's necessary. I understand why it was brought in, because I don't think, reading between the lines, I don't think they thought hybrid was going to work as well as it has. Because it hasn't done up to this point. Let's be fair.
But we have converted you now.
The hybrid works.
Yes.
We saw throughout this weekend, at the track, we were thinking, bloody hell, I saw some grunt passing the car. In actual fact, it was hybrid. It was people were using the hybrid to get past.
Yeah.
That it works. I can't argue it doesn't anymore. It clearly does.
Can I get the hat down for you to eat?
You may. And but based on that, we don't need this tyre rule, in my opinion. I'm more than happy to say you've got an option, or even a selection, you've got three tyres, it's up to you when you run them. Happy with that. You run them when they need, you know, it's up to you when you run them. There's no mandatory you have to run it because you finished here. I never liked the idea of punishing people for doing well. I never liked the idea of that, and we've debated that about F1 many a time. I hate that as a concept. The hybrid does that enough for me by reducing the amount.
Yes.
That's fine. I don't like the fact that you don't have this hard tyre obligation. And then, as you say, it's absolutely bonkers that it carries over to the next race if one's wet. That's bonkers.
Yeah. I tend to agree. I don't think it's necessary in this season for that to be a mandatory in race two for those top 10. One caveat is I want to see how it works on a standard normal weekend,
yeah,
which we're not even going to get next time out, because Thruxton only uses the hard tyre. but I do want to see whether it is going to fully penalise all of those drivers in the top 10, whether in race two we're going to see drivers coming from 11th or 12th on the grid, or maybe a soft tyre, coming through to actually win.
Yeah, that's interesting, and I'm happy to see how that works. And I also accept we can't get rid of it halfway through a season. We're stuck with this now until next year, but yeah. I think that has to... As I say, I've got no problem with running more than one tyre compound of a weekend.
No.
And saying you have to run both or all three. But actually, I thought last year's session was more interesting with the freedom to pick the three tyres.
Yes.
Seeing the tactics and seeing some of the absolute mess-ups. But the interest of at Napa, where they basically said to Cavish, you win this one, Sutton wins the next one, etc., etc. You know, that, to me, is more interesting and brings in more tactical elements, which makes the race more interesting.
I also tend to think that the tyre split that we've got this year, the difference in lap times, basically, is much bigger than we saw last year with the three different sets of tyres.
Yes, I
would agree. Which is, I think, then it extrapolates and makes that difference so much larger throughout a whole field.
Well, let's go actually on to race two. So for tyre compounds for race two, I'm just going to read you here. So Sutton, Chilton and Watson all started on... Am I on the right one? Yeah, wets. Oh, it's in number order, not... That's why I was getting confused. Yeah, they all started on wets. Rob Huff started on hard. So he started on a dry tyre.
As did Smiley.
Yep. I was going to say, Smiley started on medium, not hard. And then everybody else started on wets. When people pitted, we saw Ronan Pearson pit and go on to medium. Colin Turkington pit and come on to hard. Robottom and Morgan pitted and came on to hard. Aaron Taylor-Smith pitted and came on to softs. And Tom Ingram pitted and came on to hard.
And four of those drivers eventually throughout the rest of the race then came back in to change back on to the wets.
Yes. Yeah, so that's the tyre choices.
It gives you a good idea of how much rain and inconsistency we had in one race due to the weather.
Absolutely. The circuit did at the start look mainly dry, to be fair, with a few wet patches. Snow to be down the S's through Coram and Bombhole.
Yeah.
Going on the formation lap, Sutton, Ingram, Turkington, Taylor Swift and Pearson all bailed at the end of the green flag lap to go and have the tyre change.
Yep.
We've already discussed the tyre order, so we'll get rid of that. And then the start itself, both Hill and Thompson jumped the start. Each received a 10-second penalty. Hill said afterwards that he knew it as soon as he'd done it. And what Cameron said was interesting afterwards as well was that last year you could move under the 5-second board as long as you stopped before the lights came on.
Mm.
Whereas now, if you move at all, you're done for. Which seems more sensible, I have to say. That seems a more sensible rule. So, and as Hill said, there's no contesting it. He completed it. Fair cop, Gov.
It was interesting to hear Hill's interview after the race as well, to hear him say that the handbrake didn't hold when he was... Just balancing it, basically.
That doesn't half feel like excuse number. so we'll go for that one.
64 out of the playbook.
We'll go for that one. That's the reason. That's the reason.
But I think Thompson reacted to Hill's
movement. I agree with you on that entirely. Yeah, absolutely. Lap two, already the temperature started to drop by lap two, cloudy over, and the psychological rain started to sort of fall. That's only lap two of the race. Huff and Smiley, who were, as I say, both on the the slick tyres, were a long way off the rest of the pack by the end of lap one.
They were a good 5 or 6 seconds a lap off the pace, weren't they?
Yeah, although this is the bit of the race that I really got confused by. Morgan on lap three pitted for slicks, despite the fact it had clouded over and the temperature had dropped and the slick tyre wasn't quick at this point.
Yes.
That was a bizarre call for me. You either do it, you would live... Take the gamble at the start, or you live by your choice.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, we get 40 degree sunshine and it dries out in a lap. You know, that was a very odd call for me. Aaron Taylor Smith was trying to move through the field on the soft tyre. Was the quickest of the slick shot cars,
as you'd expect. The warm up on that soft tyre is so quickly.
Yeah.
And he then proceeded to still make progress when more rain started to fall because of the heat kept in the tyre.
Although even though he was making some progress, we still weren't at the crossover point before that. I want to just give credit to Moffat at this point, actually, because by that four, he was up 13 places off the start. Now, I know some cars in front have been pitted, but even so, that's still 13 places and four laps isn't bad. By that five, the crossover seemed to be coming in. Aaron Taylor-Smith did go quickest, but only just. Hill was still pretty quick out front, although Hill was ridiculous this weekend anyway.
Yep.
And then pretty much as soon as Aaron Taylor-Smith went purple, rain started to fall. Albeit not heavy rain, it was again sort of light, as you described it, and Tim Harvey later described it, it's like you two are in sync.
Oh, Christ, really?
Psychological rain, as you said at the track. Yeah. So just a little bit damp on the windscreen, but not enough to upset the slick tyres at that point. Chilton then pass Dobble by leaving the track and didn't give the position back. Now, I just couldn't understand this in any way, shape, or form. Like, it was so clearly he straight lined the S's.
The only thing I think he might have in his mind that going into that braking zone, he was marginally ahead, but he was never going to make the corner.
It's not like Dobble didn't give him room.
No.
He had plenty of room, he just didn't stop the car.
Yeah, he was on the outside going into the S's, and it looked like he just wasn't going to pull it up in time, so he thought, well, in for a penny, in for a pound, I'll just cut straight across.
Yeah, he would get punished for this later, unsurprisingly. It was the clearest leaving the track into gain an advantage that you're probably going to see all season. I'm just amazed that a driver of his experience and a team like that didn't just get on the range and say, Tom, just give the
blades back. Yeah.
But anyway, there we go. Huff then dropped it at the S's due to the conditions. Obviously, he was on the slick tyres.
Not the only time he did that this weekend.
No, he did enjoy doing it for the S's. He did a bit of rally circuit, Pearson would then drop it at Williams completely on his own on the slick tyres. So, again, suggesting the slick tyres were not the correct call.
No.
Hill was absolutely gapping Watson by this point. Obviously, with that 10-second penalty, he was 7 seconds ahead. I was a bit disappointed at Watson, I have to say. Being on the same tyre, and I know that Hill was ridiculous, had that car set up perfectly this weekend, but a driver who's got a 10-second penalty shouldn't be that far ahead, or should be winning the race because he can pull out a bigger gap.
The only rebuttal that I have to that is, in qualifying, he was nearly half a second quicker than everyone in every session.
Yeah, no,
Hill was, and he knew that he had to just put in qualifying laps.
Hill was crazy this
weekend. No matter the conditions he was in, they were going to be the same for everyone else on the circuit, and he just had to get on with it.
But Watson is a good driver in the way, as we saw last year. I was just slightly disappointed that people like him and Camish weren't able to give any sort of fight. No, Camish did say afterwards that they, as I said, I thought they might have done to you, is that he'd gone wet tyres but fairly dry setup in the basis that he might drive throughout. Yeah. And I wonder if Toyota did the same with Watson. And I wonder if Hill just found a damp setup basically and just committed to it for the whole weekend, which is why he was so quick.
I mean, it worked.
It did. By lap 7, the heavy rain began to fall and it was then full advantage to the wet cars. That was the end of any possible tyre coming to its own for the slick shot cars.
Yeah.
And at the end of lap 7, Morgan pitted again for Wentz, which, I mean, he had to for the manufacturer points because obviously he and Turkington were the
scorers.
That's the one.
Nominated yeah.
Manufacturer points. Thank you very much indeed. By lap 8, Hill had the 10 seconds he needed to get around the penalty. So incredible. I'd say I don't want to take anything away from him with the criticism of the drivers behind. He was on rails this weekend and ludicrously quick. Lap 8, Orobot and Rava would then pit to change from the dry to the wet tyre. He'd pitted during the race and pitted again. I just don't see the point in that personally.
He had a bad weekend, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Talking of bad weekend, Sutton, for a collector's item, lost the rear of the car at Riches and had to cut across the grass. Wrong tyre, wrong conditions.
Yep. Still pushing, though.
Yeah.
Credit to him, but all for nothing, really.
Yeah, and again, I bashed the hard tyre quite a lot, but it does just seem to be quite a really poor tyre, doesn't it? Albeit the conditions weren't right for it, but it just seems to be a really bad tyre.
Yeah. Unless, like Thruxton, next time out, everyone's going to be on it for every race, then you really do see the difference.
Yeah. Lap 9, Watson had a massive brown trouser moment, slide at the S's and got fired across the grass, dropping him down to 7th. That was the biggest disappointment for me, is that he had a podium all signed, sealed and delivered. And
I think he was just either a little bit hot into there or a little bit offline, which meant that that back end tried to come around. He was very lucky, having clipped that inside sausage curve, not to do
big damage. Did last year, it's a little bit rookie. If we're being, we've got to be fair to all the drivers. If that had been another driver who, let's put an Osborne in front of the name, for example, we would be giving him a lot more grief, I think, than...
Osborne can do that in the dry.
We'll get to that later. To chuck away a second like that, I mean, he'll know. He'll be gutted, obviously, with that, obviously. But difficult conditions, as I say. But he's impressed so well in his short career already in the touring cars that he's impressed so well that you just don't expect him to make those kind of mistakes, I think.
I think especially as he wasn't under extensive pressure from Camish, because Camish was there just holding off Bobby.
And he wasn't really under extensive pressure to catch Hill. I think by that point he'd let it go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those. I don't want to be too harsh, obviously. But lap 10, Sutton was off, and this time for good. He hit the tyre wall at Williams, managed to limp it home to swap tyres. Obviously, he had to go back out to score manufacturer points, being a nominated driver. But again, a collector's item.
I know he was on the wrong tyre, but it was a weird place to go wide.
Really weird place. Yeah, really, really weird place to go wide. I can only think he's clipped some a really damp part or a really bit of water, standing water maybe, and just... Or the tyres are just cold. It's the hard tyre. I imagine it's just gone very cold.
Yeah.
That was pretty much the end of the race, apart from Turkington would sneak past Ingram on the last lap of a last-minute pass through the final Murrays as the final chicane. Turkington, to be fair, did pretty well on that tyre, the hard tyre. Probably made that work the best out of anybody on it.
Considering the conditions, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things at the end of the tyre to end of the race, rather, to note. Cook went from 14th to 3rd, which is a very good drive for him to the podium places.
Yeah.
And I actually think that Taylor Smith, Huff and Smiley did very well to keep the cars straight and on the circuit, mostly, to score points all on the wrong tyre. Aaron Taylor Smith, in particular, on the soft tyre, was very, very good.
Yes.
Kept the warmth in them very well and actually showed some quite good skill to comfortably finish in the points.
Yeah.
Smiley did pretty well as well, considering he's new to the car back in the series. I think all three impressed. But to,
And Smiley was taking it to Huff as well towards the end of the race, and I think it might have been what caused Huff to make a couple of errors.
Mistakes, yeah. And, we'll just talk about Sutton putting it in the wall. Taylor Swift didn't.
No.
Yeah, so I just want to, you've got to give credit for that. He did really well, I think, both him and Smiley, to keep the car running on the circuit and... stay out of trouble at the wrong time.
Yeah. So the amended classification, and this takes into the account Chilton's time penalty and obviously Thompson's as well. Jake Hill took the win, and that eventually was by over 6 seconds, and that's with his penalty included. It was a massive margin.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Dan Hamish was second, from Josh Cook in third. Mikey Double was fourth. Chilton in fifth. Watson in sixth. Thompson 7th, Moffitt 8th, Osborne 9th, De Leon in 10th, Sumpton up there in 11th, followed by the first of the slick tyre runners in Aaron Taylor Smith in 12th, Chris Smiley 13th, Rob Huff 14th, and Colin Turkington, as you say, nicking that last point from Ingram on the final corner to get 15th.
I missed him out there. De Leon did a really nice race too as well.
Yes, yeah.
Drove an inch-perfect race and scored really good points, which is good for him. That would then obviously lead to the reverse redraw, as we do for race 3, and that was number 9 that got pulled out, which was Sam Osborne. And my final point on race 2 is, it's good to see that double race winners are a thing of the past. No more of that. Oh dear. Although I will say, in Toker's defence and Alan Garrell's defence, Weber has played a ridiculous part in both Donington and here in terms of those wins. Brands Hatch is the one that worries me slightly more, because Colin won both of those at an absolute canter. But we need the data for the whole season. Brands worries me more than this did here. Albeit that Hill shouldn't be... I can't remember the last time a touring car driver won was that big a gap.
No. That car was absolutely on rails this weekend.
Yep, so as I say, ball number 9 came out, which put Osborne on pole, and that left everybody a bit of a decision to make for race 3 for the tyre, so I'll just go through them now. Ash Sutton started on the medium tyre, Chilton soft, Andrew Watson wet, which we'll get to in a moment, Huff soft, Pearson hard, Moffat soft, DeLion medium, Thompson hard, Turkington medium, Jake Hill wet, Camish hard, Sumpton soft, Rowbottom medium, Morgan medium, Taylor Smith hard, Cook and Osborne soft, Ingram medium, Dobble soft, and Chris Smiley hard.
It's almost like they were drawn at random, going, right, you've got this tyre, you've got that tyre, you've got that tyre.
That sounds a slightly better system than the current one. Race 3, as I say, Osborne pulled on pole, and if we're being honest, we both said to each other at the start of it, he's not winning this. It was grimly predictable, wasn't it? Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, we both said to ourselves, he's got a rick in him somewhere.
Yeah.
And it happened from the off.
Yeah, I mean, let's just go into the track itself at this point. The track was damp in places, again, down the S's and the back part of the circuit. It wasn't wet so much as damp. I wouldn't say it was
enough to kick up spray.
Yeah. But I wouldn't say it was wet. However, Hill and Watson started on the wets. Now, Hill basically said that the hard tyre is rubbish.
Yeah.
It's still slightly wet.
Yeah.
I've got a really good setup that's working.
Yeah.
Let's give it a go.
His intent after that first lap that we saw was, I need to get into the lead and I need to make as big a margin as possible to try and hold as many positions as possible.
Yeah.
One thing I must say before we fully get into the race is I believe this is the first time, especially with Goodyear, that all compounds have been used in the same race.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Every possible compound available, which this weekend there were four. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I do think it's pretty damning for the tyres and for the series that, yeah, Hill thought that the hard was so bad he'd rather go on a wet, despite the fact that it wasn't really a wet track.
For the majority of it wasn't a wet track.
Or it was never going to last as a wet track.
No, certainly.
That's quite damning, I think. And I think, as I say, that's so another reason these are looking at. But we've done that to death, so we'll get on to the race itself. Yep. Hill had an absolute demon start off the grid. Just weaving between two cars that just didn't seem to start at all. Now, obviously, the BMW gets a good pull off the grid anyway.
So from the drone shot that we saw, I honestly thought he was just going to go on the grass and go boom, straight down the outside of everyone.
Well, I thought when he hit the grass, he was going to spin it, because obviously the grass was still wet. The grass dries a lot slower than the asphalt does. I thought, cracky, with the rear wheel drive and the coldness, he's just going to turn this around and we're going to have a start line instant like we did all those years ago with the cameraman being taken out. But he managed to keep it going. I mean, Hill does like an overtake on the grass. We've seen that a couple of times, haven't we, in his career.
Legally.
I'll give him his credit. He was up into second straight away. And actually, it looked like he was going to do an absolute madness with his tyre choice.
As soon as he got to the back end of the circuit as well, he pulled out, what, 2 or 3 seconds in the first lap?
Yeah.
And I was like, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
What's going on?
He did nearly get Osborne's when Osborne drops it on his own. It's a really poor mistake. I don't like putting the boot in, but it's a really bad mistake.
It felt like he just way overcommitted to that corner being dry enough.
To me, he panicked. But where he was, I think he got a bit excited, a bit panicky, and just overdrove the car, just in a way that,
luckily, he didn't hit anyone.
I don't know how he didn't hit anyone.
No.
I think Hill basically became invisible or a ghost and drove through him, because I don't know how he...
Both him and Moffitt were on the anchors as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And it was lucky that Osborne went off to the left-hand side of the track as you're going around the circuit, rather than right-hand, otherwise that would have been safety car, barriers needing repairing and all sorts.
Yeah. With a 6:30 curfew.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which we're already cutting it fine on.
Absolutely. Hill, as I say, as you say, was straight into second and would then get past Moffat later on in that lap. Smiley and DeLion came together. Pearce and Huff were all involved as well. To be honest, it was a case of 4-1 doesn't go.
A bit of a pincery movement as well, wasn't it?
No one's to blame in that. No. Smiley is the unfortunate
casualty
of that and had bad damage. Kudos to him for being able to limp it to a safe position because one of the wheels was bent and clearly not moving, so he did really well to get that safety.
One of the driving wheels as well was just pushed up into the arch, and the rear wheel was bent out of line.
Yeah, so he did really well to get that to safety. Yeah, fair play on that score. But as I say, no penalty was given out afterwards. I think that's right. I just think that's the first lap of the touring cars.
Yeah.
It's what happens. You win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Smiley, he lost this one. Hill was then into the lead and absolutely flying. Watson was following through behind. Thompson would then straight line the S and then fell back through the grid after that. I think he might have picked up a little bit of damage. That and the hard tyre not really clicking with
him. Yeah, the hard tyre did not want to turn on in that final race.
By lap two, Hill had an absolute monster gap. And certainly for me, the hat-trick headlines were well on the cards. I had fully committed at this point and thought he'd done a madness because I had TSL open.
Yeah.
And the times he was doing compared to the rest of the field, it was 3-4 seconds a lap.
Not even just compared to the rest of the field, the times he was doing compared to Watson, who was also on the wet tyre,
he was
a couple of seconds quicker than him.
I'm looking at that thinking,
I
don't know how do they catch up?
Listeners, that was Russell in shock.
Yeah. Just by lap two, Ingram was up 9 places, which was a hell of a start for him. That wasn't really picked up on the cameras. And Turkington and Sutton were also well into the point, so they were really trying to get back some lost ground from race number two. Dobble then lost the rear on his own and slid off the track, which was a bit of a shame, given on the grid he said he'd need to strap on his big boy pants and get a good result, and in the end didn't. But he did keep the car going, so fair play to him, but... Yeah, a bit of a mistake on his own.
There are a few excursions from some drivers in this race, though.
There was. By lap three, the the slick tyres started to really come in. Huff was the quickest, or started to look like the quickest on the circuit, but really had a long cars to make up.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going so much quicker than Hill. He was going a lot quicker than the cars ahead of him on slicks, but not that quicker than Hill. So I was still a little bit umming and ahhing.
On the optimum soft tyre at that point as
well. Absolutely, well pointed out. That four row bottom by the puncture to compound his miserable weekend, probably from debris from DeLion's car, which he got a fair bit of...
I'm not as convinced on that, having seen the replays.
Okay.
Just in the fact that a lot of the debris that came off of DeLion's car was on the left-hand side of the circuit, and the puncture that Robotton got was on the front right.
May I be slightly peevish?
Sure.
That's more of a meatball flag than anything the Toyota's got at Brands Hatch for me. But it's actually shredding and coming off.
Yeah.
But that's more of a meatball flag than having a little bit of arse hanging off like the Toyota did.
Yeah.
But I won't spend too long on that because this podcast has been long enough already. But what I don't like, and I always say, is consistency. Yeah. And to me, that's a more slam dunk meatball flag.
Yeah.
I still think it'd be harsh, but it's more of a slam dunk than... than the one for Cook at Brands Hatch. I said my piece. lap four, Huff set the fastest lap. I was then, at this point, was 3 seconds a lap quicker than Hill. So this is really where the slick started to click, wasn't it?
But still had drivers to get past and battle past.
Yeah. By lap six, Watson had been caught by the slick Toyotas and then passed. Huff got past Cook with a very firm move. It is nice to see they're allowed to race, but I wonder if that will be reined in as the season goes on a little bit. But...
yeah, I think I said something similar for Brands as well with some of the moves that were made, especially into paddock.
Although, what I will say is that in the interview after the race, Moffat basically said, I gave him a hard one at Donington, he's given me a hard one back here. Yeah. That's racing, we're happy with that. We've both got one on. It's one all, basically. Yeah. Which I think there's a real good spirit in that camp. I mean, obviously, Huff is an incredibly well respected racer. Anyway, Cook is a very accomplished racer. I assume Moffat's very good, and Watson's a rising star. So, I think there's a lot of respect in that garage. Robotton, this bit really annoyed me, actually. Cook was next to go past Watson with a fairly easy move. Watson had given up by then the tyres had gone. Robotton was in a lap down, and for me, it was just in the way of this group. And just think out of the way. I don't understand.
I think we mentioned this afterwards once we got back home. We didn't see blue flags.
No, we didn't see any blue flags this weekend, which is bizarre in its own right. But Robotton was big enough and experienced enough to know that he's a lap down. And to me, he just... and this wasn't the only time. He got in the way later on in the race with Chilton a little bit. I just don't... Yeah. I was a bit surprised by that. I just think, use your noggin a little bit.
Yeah, I think the only comeback that he has got on that is that there didn't seem to be blue flags or blue lights.
Well, I agree, but...
directed his way.
I agree, but you also got to take a bit of responsibility yourself.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. By lap six, Hill was nearly 7 seconds clear still, which...
It seemed ominous at that time.
It did, because whilst the slicks were coming in, he still wasn't that much slower at this point. He was half a second slower, maybe, which obviously wasn't going to be enough with the amount of time left. And 7 seconds clear, I was just thinking, has he done enough in the early stages?
He seemed to be doing enough to keep the tyres cool as well. Out the back of the circuit, he was finding all the damp areas that he could, because once those wet tyres get hot, the tyre blocks on top of them go really like jelly-like, and you're not going to get any grip at all. So he did really well to keep hold of that tyre for as long as he did.
Oh, I do think he was helped out by the fact that the Toyotas behind were squabbling, which was costing them a lot of time.
Yes.
Huff, Moffat and Cook were absolutely stuck together and not yielding at all. And actually, I think what would have been more sensible is if they got the races right, stop it, catch Hill, and then you can fight out afterwards.
Yeah.
Tow each other to Hill, get past him, and then I don't care what you do, as long as you take each other out. Huff would then go across the grass, trying to pass Cook. He would get
again.
He also got past Moffat at this point because of the cut in the grass. He did give the place back to Moffat, didn't give the place back to Cook. But I think that's because actually Cook didn't give him any room. I do think this is slightly different to the Chilton one, so I don't think enough room was left for him.
I think... he had already given the place back to Cook, but he had so much traction that it was literally a let him back past and straight back through.
Possibly, although it was difficult because Moffat was also so close to pick up. My interpretation was that he gave the place back to Moffat, didn't give the place back to Cook, but purely because, in his mind, he was forced off the track by Cook rather than volunteering to leave the track because of a mistake. But anyway, no appeal was put in by Toyota afterwards. I wonder why. Entering lap 8, the gap had dropped to 4.8 seconds. With 4 laps to go, That's still a fair big gap, wasn't it?
It was cut quite significantly, and visually, each time they came round lap by lap, you could see the gaps getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah, by the S's, the Toyota train had run and truly caught Hill. Although, in that part of the circuit, he was able to get a bit more...
He pulled a good couple of seconds out of the back of that circuit.
It was where it was wet.
Yeah.
And also, again... Huff having a massive slide wasn't a particularly... Sorry, Moffat having a massive slide.
Absolute. He caught that well.
He caught that very well. He
caught that very well. Yeah. To not actually leave the circuit and be able to snap back into line and not have any contact with any other driver either.
It was almost like he saw Max Hall in the means and went, hang on a minute, hold my beer, and decided to do a bit of his own. But
yeah,
he did very well indeed to hold that. But that took Huff into second. And then by that nine, Huff was able to take the lead, which pretty much opened the floodgates on Hill, unfortunately. He would then drop back through the field. Ingram was next to pass him. This really annoyed me, to go back to Robot, my next point. Robot then tried to pass Hill and went off the road in doing so, because he... We'll move on from that, because there's not a lot to say, but... Yeah, it's just...
Strange decisions, yeah.
And I know, obviously, it was quicker, because Hill's tyres were going at that point, but you're a lap down, you don't need to be forcing it. And if you're leaving the road to unlap yourself, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Chilton and Hill were then squabbling, which Sutton, absolute vintage style, nipped a pair of them into out of Agostini.
I think I have to slightly criticise Chilton here.
Oh, okay.
In the fact that you know that Hill is on the wrong tyre... You don't have to battle
force
him.
Yeah, you don't have to force it
into Agostini.
And then just drive past him on the Bentley straight in a minute. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I get that.
And then he wouldn't have then lost the position to Sutton and have been in a net zero game.
Oh, to be fair to Sutton, it's a great move by him.
Yes, it's opportunity.
Just popped it down the inside. Yep, okay, cheers, lads. Yeah, I'll see you at the finish line. I will then give Chilton some credit back, because he didn't have battle Sutton after that. He didn't take it lying down. And we have criticised Tom Chilton on this podcast before for not being enough of a backup to Ingram and not being good enough at taking points off Sutton.
Yeah.
Albeit he did fail to take points off Sutton. But he gave it a heck of a go. And you've got to give credit to that. And Chilton looks very fired up this season, I have to say.
He looks much more comfortable.
He does, yeah.
And I just wonder whether that's having that security of having Barry Plowman there.
Possibly, yeah.
Or the team dynamics atmosphere, which he's been used to before.
Possibly. I just think maybe it's just clicked to him, because I think in previous years we've looked at him and gone, he's yesterday's man. He's not going to win a championship. That's clear. I don't think he will.
Stranger things have happened.
Well, not as anybody else.
Leicester won the Premier League, mate. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless those four leave. I don't think he'd be... Anyway, let's not go down this weird philosophical route. He looks a lot more fired up this year. He looks a lot more front-running this year.
He looks like he's going to pick up results.
I think he could well win a race this year with a good reversal going his way. That was basically concluded an absolutely crazy race three. Huff was the winner, leading home a Toyota 1-2-3. Moffat was second. By the end, he gapped Cook quite a lot. Cook had run out of hybrid and his tyres were going off. Moffat had the hybrid to help him get away. One more lap, I think Ingram would have spoiled the 1-2-3 parade. But
quite possibly.
Just what didn't come to quick enough. However, a fourth, considering where he started, he will absolutely take.
Massively,
really, really good. Really, really good finish by him. And actually, to finish off race three, I want a quick debate with you. And I know this is pocket's gone on, but I don't care because I like debating stuff with you.
Can I give out the final classification, then we can have a little debate?
Yeah, go on then.
So, as you say, 1-2-3 for Toyota, Huff, Moffitt, Cook. Ingram was fourth, followed home by Sutton, who again had made his way through the field really well and kept up with his rival. Chilton was sixth, from Turkington in seventh, Bobby Thompson in eighth, and Jake Hill slipped all the way down to ninth in the end, but still a decent point haul considering the conditions. Dobble was in 10th, Morgan in 11th, De Leon again scoring points in 12th, Camp ahead of Camage in 13th, Osborne 14th, and Taylor Smith in 15th.
Ahead of the debate, the dog has joined us to negotiate the debate or score the debate. Please don't make too much noise with the tool huffy huff. You raised a really good point on the track.
Did I?
As to who has got the best four? What team's got the best four? With Thompson now joining WSR, we've not mentioned him a great deal in this review because we've mentioned him a lot in the preview, and he's done very well this weekend.
He
was the second best scorer this weekend. A hell of a return. I do wonder what could have happened if he'd started the season, because I think he'd actually be in that top five battling for the title. But based on this alone,
yeah.
He's finally got the right stuff underneath him. I liked his interview where he was asked, you know, what's the difference between this and some of the other cards you drew? And he went, you can trust the card to last to the end. That was quite funny. I like it as well. But yeah, we're with Bobby now there. We've now got four car teams. Who do you think has got the best stable? My answer might shock you.
I think the weakest combined group is Hyundai.
Yes, because of, unfortunately, the house edge factor, and that it is effectively a free car team.
Yes. And it's very much driver versus driver. If you take the top three drivers, you're going Cook or Huff?
Probably Cook. So only because of experience in the recent sport.
Cook versus Sutton versus arguably either Turkington or Hill.
Yeah.
Sutton's the best of those.
Yeah, I'd say, but I don't think it's as... Yeah, okay, it's quite clear cut for that one, actually.
For that one, it is, yes. But then...
Well, I think Cook is a better driver than his results show. I think he's not had the machinery in recent years. I think Cook is a very accomplished driver.
And then if you step down one rank, you've either got Turkington or Hill, the other one.
Yeah.
Against Camish.
Yeah.
Against either, probably Huff, I'd say. Hill's probably the best there.
Yeah, but I think Camish is third in that group at the moment. I think Huff...
Yeah,
it's possibly second.
On form this season, certainly. And then you step down one more rank, and you've got... Oh, it's difficult to say from this weekend. Morgan or Thompson?
I think you have to go Morgan purely on the basis of the longevity of the team.
Okay.
I think based on that, I think, yeah.
Rowbottom.
Yeah.
Moffat.
Or Pearson.
Yeah.
It's Moffat. I know you won't like me to say it, but it's Moffat.
And then you drop down to the final tier.
Yeah. Osborne, Halstead.
Bobby.
Yeah, BMW are harder to categorise, but I think overall...
Which is why I think BMW have the strongest four overall.
I don't.
Don't you?
I think Toyota have got the strongest four overall.
Ooh. Okay. Add that.
I wasn't expecting you to say that. I think Napa are, with respect, effectively a three-car team as well. Osborne isn't in the mix enough.
No.
I think Hyundai, I would say, are a three-car team with House of being back there as well.
Yep.
I also then think, well, actually, are Rowbottom and Pearson up the front enough? Now, Pearson is improving all the time, but he's not... And Rowbottom has been quite anonymous. This season, yes.
I think last season he had some... good weekends where he was able to be influential on the other drivers in the title race.
But I'd say that at the minute, Toyota, all four of those are well capable of mixing for a podium, which I don't think you can say about the three at Napa.
I don't think we've seen enough from Toyota yet this season.
No, but what I would say is that coming into this, they've got more wins than Napa. Two. Mm-hmm. They've got a 1-2-3 finish, which is the best thing was...
Yes.
Secured. They are. I think they've had a car in the tops in the fast six at all three races.
Okay.
Each driver has scored. Three of the four drivers scored a podium.
Yep.
I think BMW probably on paper are the stronger team on paper, but I think actually on form so far, I think Toyota are the best four car team at the minute. I've been quite disappointed with Camish so far this season.
Mm.
Rowbottom has been anonymous. Osborne is Osborne. Over at Hyundai, I've been impressed by Chilton, albeit that he's not in that top tier of driver.
Yep.
I look at Toyota, I just think that they're just really good. They look a really good, well-oiled machine. They all seem to be working well together. They all seem to be capable of mixing it in at the qualifying, they're at the sharp ends. They all seem capable of winning a race or battling for podiums. Yeah.
Yeah, I still think BMW so far this season have had the stronger 3/4 now car lineup.
I think on paper you're right. I think on form, Morgan hasn't impressed me as much as some of the drivers that.
Well, even with his upturn in qualifying.
Yeah, but he doesn't convert in the race.
Mm.
Osborne was on pole in race three, he doesn't convert it.
Yeah.
You've got to convert. It's no good just qualifying where you've got to convert it in the race.
He was comfortably the second quickest BMW. You know how Hill had a terrible weekend at Brands, but Morgan was there or thereabouts at Brands.
Yeah, but there's only. But you just caveat at that yourself. There's only three of them at Brands, and one of them had an awful weekend. So by default,
I think that if Bobby was there, he would have had a very similar weekend to Morgan.
Well, we'll never know.
No, I know.
And also, that's his home circuit, so I think it would have been quicker. And that's where he took his best result until the weekend.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting debate. Obviously, I'd like to hear what other people think. Who has got the best four-car lineup? It's a really interesting debate, given that we're not used to having four-car teams in the touring cars. No. Certainly not four of them. Yeah. Still 16 cars on the grid out of four stables. Yeah, it'd be fascinating to hear what other people have to say on that. Right, let's quickly rifle through the predictions and the points. What are you going
to
say?
Before we do that, I would like to say a thank you.
I've got a thank you to say as well, actually. So, yes, you do. You
it may well be the same thank you as me.
No, mine is going to be different.
Okay.
Yours will be very weird to do.
I want to say thank you to the one listener who came up to us this weekend and said hello and had a good chat with us about how the touring cars was going, and to know that there is at least one person out there that appreciates what we do week in, week out. We were taken back to see you there, and fair play.
That's pretty surreal, and yeah, that was awesome. So yeah, thank you very much indeed. As I've always said, it blows our mind that anybody with our parents listen. Half the time we've found this weekend, our parents don't listen. On my thank you, as I know that they sometimes listen, your mother, thank you very much indeed to her for putting us up this weekend and for helping me to organise your surprise party, which you knew about. But never mind. Doesn't matter. That's not my fault. The game was given away. Another listener gave that game away, that being your partner. But never mind.
She
didn't mean to. Accidents happen. But yes, thank you as ever to your mother, who once again put us up for the weekend, which is very kind of her indeed. Right, moving on. This will be the one they don't watch as well. Right,
awards.
Awards, predictions and closing statements before this enters its seventh week of...
Driver of the day.
As simple as that. Hill dominated every session.
And yeah. It was
probably a 10-minute shower longer at... before the race and winning the race. So, yeah. Having all three. So, yeah, it's Hill. I'm presuming you're not going to argue.
If we'd started race 2 10 minutes earlier, he might have won all three.
I presume you're not going to argue with me on that.
No. I do have to agree with you on that one. Your villain.
I'm going Road Bottle on the basis that I think so far the season, he's up there for the villain of the season so far.
Yeah.
I think that the driving in race 3 annoyed me as much as anything else. And he's just not having a good time of it at the moment.
Okay, fair enough. My villain this weekend is that hard tyre.
Yeah, I can understand.
And
that.
I think if it performs in the same way at a standard weekend, then it's going to ruin some of the races.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, your surprise, good.
It has to be Bobby for me. As I said, I think in the preview, I wasn't expecting fireworks, and he well outperformed
that
my
expectations.
Yeah, he well outperformed my expectations.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm going to go for Chris Smiley, purely on the basis that actually he did pretty well in qualifying overall.
He was unlucky this weekend, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Obviously, getting caught up in that incident in race 3, not his fault.
Race 1, he was running really well.
Yeah.
And race 2, he did really quite well on the wrong tyre, kept his head, to score points. I will give a shout out for Chilton as well, who I thought continued his rich vein of form at the moment too. But Smiley, just purely on the basis that we kind of thought the Coopers would struggle, and they did to a degree, though DeLion had a pretty strong weekend as well. But Smiley raced pretty nicely this weekend as well. He's actually in racing people, and Lady Luck was on his side.
You're surprised bad.
I'm going for Andrew Watson.
Okay.
Purely on the basis of race 2 drops it on his own in the wet, and this may sound more like a bit of a thing, but coming into the weekend we said if it's damp, anything like that, Watson's a
good
driver
well.
In these conditions.
Yeah.
And I think the surprise bad was once we got those conditions, he didn't perform in a way I thought he was going to. Race 3, took the gamble on the tyre, it didn't work, but so did Hill, and Hill did still finish pretty well. Watson didn't finish anywhere near as well and dropped off a lot sooner. Now I accept that Hill had a much better setup on the car this weekend, and I get all of that. But race 2 is the one for me where the surprise bad comes right to the forefront, because those are the conditions he should like, and he just was nowhere and then drops it entirely on his own, chucking away a podium in the process.
Fair enough.
Which would have had all four Toyota drivers with a podium, which I don't think Napa will be able to say at any point this year.
My surprise bad is Napa.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I think they got quite a few decisions wrong this weekend.
Yeah.
Whether that be the tyre strategy choice across the three races, whether that be mistakes from drivers.
I did find it very funny what Camus was saying in his interview after race two about with Sutton coming into pits for wets and going, for goodness sake, give me a break. I don't know. We could be reading far too much into it, but I don't think it's a particularly happy camp or as happy as it could be. I might be reading too much into it.
You normally do.
We did think it was interesting that Sutton's pit mate, this Stetson, was Rowbottom and not Camish.
Yeah. But I just think that Napa really messed up a weekend that they could have benefited from massively. And secondly, they ran so well out last year.
They did, although Sutton did say in one of his interviews that was a bit of an anomaly. And they were fully expecting BMW to go well.
It's a BMW track.
And generally, he's right. It is a BMW track or a real drive track. I mean, what he did in the Infiniti a couple of years ago here was insane, wasn't it? So
what he did in the Infiniti permanent was insane.
Yeah, no, that is also true. But I understand the Napa, why you've gone for Napa. And I think Osborne to then drop a clanger with a pole. I don't think he'd won the race anyway because of the way Huff came through. But yeah, a clanger.
Right, shall we get on to our predictions?
Yeah, so we'll start with qualifying. We both get a point, as we both went for... No, I don't get you get a point. Sorry, I don't.
I was going to say, when did you sneak that one in?
You went for Hill, I went for Camish. Yeah, there's no argument. You won that.
It was so quick.
Yeah. We both went for Hill for a race win, so yes. That's fine. Yep. I also went for Watson and Camish's race winners. Neither did come to the fore. When Hill got a 10-second penalty in race two, I was...
You were so hopeful.
Camish and Watson were... second or third. So I was thinking, perfect. But I'm going to get one of these is going to come through surely. No, that didn't work, but fair enough. Your other two race winners were...
Ingram and Cook.
Cook was close.
Just missed out on that one.
Yeah.
And we both went for Pearson for for Jack Sears.
Yeah, and it was Mikey Doble who won the Jack Sears.
Convincingly
this
as well.
Weekend. Yeah, absolutely. So that takes on to the general predictions. So I get 3 out of 3 here for the second week running, I'm going to point out.
Yes.
I had Bobby Thompson to score a top 6 finish. Camish to be the top Napa scoring car. That was bold, wasn't it? Paid off, didn't it?
Yeah.
And 2 of the 4 to miss the top quick 6 format, which I think I'm probably going to have to retire after this weekend because I think that's going to become quite a staple throughout the rest of the season.
Yes, I might have to save that for later in the season.
Yeah.
And build those points back up. But as long as I can keep up with you.
I think at the halfway point in the summer break, we should ban a prediction for each other for the rest of the season.
I mean, how's that fair?
Make it interesting. No, one you've already used, you can't use it again. I mean, not.
Oh, yeah, we can't use our predictions again once we've already called them out. I thought we agreed that before the start of the season.
Okay.
Yeah. Why?
I should go to 3 next time.
My first prediction that didn't come in was Pearson to outscore Chilton. Yeah. And, Chilton seems to be running quite well this season.
Yeah, Pearson had a bit of an off day as well.
Yeah, however, I was correct with all 4 BMWs outscoring the Napa boys. Napa boys, as I said, had a poor weekend. And for Hill to outscore Turkington this weekend, which he did with ease.
Yep, and finally, we had to null and void our general prediction because it was going to be how much was a pint of Guinness for Sam's birthday weekend.
Which they ran out of.
They ran out of Guinness, yeah. So... what I will say is if anybody can comment how much the Guinness was, I'm happy to reinstate a point that way. If anybody bought a Guinness or runs the bar was able to tell us. We believe it's probably £7. However, we decided that without being able to put it to test, because Guinness, sometimes you do pay a slightly more price on. You did get a pint of cider instead, which gave you a headache, so that went very well indeed. That was £7. But if anybody did go to Snesson and did have a Guinness and can confidently say, bearing in mind there's a trophy on the line here, how much the Guinness was, then I'm happy to give the point after that. If we can get, ideally, 2 people saying the same thing.
Yes.
I'll be happy to give the point after that. Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'll be null and void.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if it is null and void... 4 all from this weekend.
Yeah, which makes it 10 all.
Which makes it 10 all overall.
It's very nip and tuck, isn't it?
Level playing going into Thruxton next time out. And, all to play for.
What I would say is that I do think we will beat our prediction scores from last year, bearing in mind that we're a third of the way through, over a third, I think, into what we actually scored.
I think that's going to happen because it's a smaller grid.
Yes.
And there's less to pick from as such.
Yes.
But yeah, let us know your thoughts and feelings on the racing this weekend, how you feel the weather played its part, whether you think it was the right calls on tyres and stuff like that, and all the strategy decisions that had to be made. Thank you again to everyone that does listen. We really do appreciate it, and we'd love to see your likes and comments below. And if you haven't already, and I know there's still people out there that haven't subscribed, click that subscribe button, please, because it helps us for feedback.
Absolutely. And also, we've got a lot of traction, what do you want to call it, over on TikTok. Mm-hmm. So if you are on here, make sure you follow the TikTok. And if you're on TikTok, make sure you're following on the other platforms, basically. Let's grow the channel.
Yes. Anything else to add?
The TikToks are very funny. Go watch those. I've been working hard on those. It makes for funny memes, so go and watch those. The Gary Neville one went down incredibly well, which I'm very happy about.
Yeah, we will be back just under 2 weeks' time to bring you a preview for Thruxton. And
I'm really excited. I'm actually excited for Thruxton this year.
I'm really glad I'm sitting down when you said that.
Look, I think that we leave this circuit a third of the way through the championship with 11 points in the top four.
Yeah.
This is fantastic. I don't necessarily agree with all the regulations and stuff, but when was the last time we actually had a championship fight that went that didn't just mathematically go the distance?
This
really could, and I hope it doesn't peter out, but this really could be epic.
I do hope it's not because of the random weather conditions that we've had and stuff, and I do hope it's the format of the championship now that is creating these circumstances.
It's my job to be miserable.
No, I'm just saying I hope it is, and I think as long as we get a standard dry weekend at Thruxton, we're going to see some of that play out, and yeah, going forward, it could be the tightest championship that we've seen in a long while.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to Thruxton. We will preview it in a couple of weeks' time, as you say, and until then, bye for now.
Bye-bye.